being a textbook, trying to be written like it's not a textbook, puts it in a textbook type format.
Well, I guess we just have to be really boring since it's a textbook. Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your hosts, Jorn Sutai Vampyr and Jajim Vestai Jajim, will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Welcome, warrior, to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jajim.
And I am Professor Jorn, who are going to take you through the happy field of Klingon language as written up by the creator of that language, Mark Okrand. Pay close attention, for you will not be tested upon the knowledge we are about to impart.
Yes, and if you don't possess this knowledge, it could be hazardous to your health.
Because like in other languages, when you mispronounce a word, you've just got to say, I'm sorry. In Klingon, you got to pull out your batleth and defend your honor.
Be prepared to defend yourself, absolutely. So we are looking at Mark Okrand's Klingon for the Galactic Traveler.
A book expressly written for the purpose of giving you enough background in the language so that you may go to Kronos and not get yourself killed.
So we kind of exchanged ideas back and forth about this, trying to figure out how we're going to approach it. And both of us kind of agree that this is written a lot like a textbook, and it reads as a textbook.
And it presents its information like a textbook. It can be studied like a textbook. And I guess that if it quacks like a textbook and walks like a textbook and swims like a textbook, it must be a textbook.
Yeah. This is definitely a reference book for the Klingon language.
A lot more in depth than the original Klingon dictionary was, but nonetheless, a dictionary.
Right. And there also, I noticed, wasn't a whole lot of information in the book on how to pronounce certain things. Okay, like...
The G in the Aztec word for egg. Mark actually used that reference in the Klingon dictionary to explain how to pronounce the letter TLH.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a useful book. In a lot of ways, and in some ways, it's not going to be real helpful, which means thank goodness for the Klingon Language Institute, where you can learn how to pronounce things correctly.
Well, that's the nice thing that Mark immediately goes into with this book. There, with the exception of Ta-Ho, or the Emperor's language, there is no correct pronunciation for Klingon.
Mm-hmm.
If it sounds Klingon, it is Klingon. Boy, that sounds a lot like Kag's costuming policy.
Well, you know, I would actually kind of agree with that, but you know, the series of shows we've been doing with Kartan and John Shi, I've learned a lot more. And let's say, for instance, the word for district that you have listed here, Yos, Y-O-S, my guess would be that the correct pronunciation for that would actually be Yosh.
But according to Mark, if you mess up, you're just speaking in a dialect.
No.
And you can be forgiven.
You can be, or you may not be. It just depends.
Well, it depends on the word, but...
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to get killed over district, but there is an entire section in the book that talks about if you mispronounce...
It talks about words that when mispronounced mean a whole different subject.
An entirely different thing, yes. And you can really get in a lot of trouble for it. So anyway, let's launch into this and talk about your first section here, which you did the notes. You did a great job with the notes. And let's just get started with speech patterns.
Okay, we talk about pronunciation in Klingon, ho, or wo, ho, which is the language of the empire. W-O apostrophe, wo, means empire,
mm-hmm.
which is different than the ta, ho, that I mentioned earlier. Ta is emperor, so ta, ho, is the language that the emperor speaks, which is whoever the emperor is, the language that he speaks is considered to be the correct pronunciation of the Klingon language.
I see.
But that doesn't mean that if you come from a different region of Kronos and you pronounce things a little bit differently, that you're pronouncing them wrong. So there's a little flexibility in pronouncing things in Klingon.
Yeah. Well, I would think there are in many languages. For instance, German.
Y'all.
Well, that, but in German, there's what's called High German and Low German. And so there are certain things that are pronounced differently in High German than they are in Low German. And, you know, it's just kind of like the same thing here in the United States. We have Nebraska English and we have Georgia English. So it really just depends.
And to take your analogy a step further, that Nebraska English, as you refer to it, is actually known as Midwestern dialect of American English and is what is used by broadcasters.
Ah.
So, like Klingon, we have our Taho version of the language. It's just a dialect that is the most understandable of all the different dialects, whether they be Yankee or Boston or Georgian or, you know, Southern California.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever. I'm just looking out my window at the bird, huge bird, that my dog is barking at.
Oh, I was wondering what was getting your targol in a knot. So,
yeah, but yeah, so it's kind of an analogous that we in America have the same pattern of speech that Mark is talking about in this first section,
mm-hmm.
which I always read as a get out of jail free card for mispronunciations.
Ah. So now, are we saying that as far as pronunciation is concerned, and ta-hol with the speech patterns, it depends on where the emperor at the time is from?
Well, it depends on who the emperor is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he's from, say, this Krotma region that we talk about a little bit later, or the Morskan dialect,
mm-hmm.
then that's going to morph into, well, we're going to do what the emperor does and we're going to follow his teachings, his patterns of speech. Now, that doesn't change Klingon Hall. Klingon Hall doesn't change based on the emperor, but Ta Klingon does.
I see.
Ta Hall does.
Okay. All right. So, once again, we have regional speech patterns that change, as you say. And Kronos has three regions, according to your notes. Or, no, actually, there are four, aren't there?
I think this is a situation where we need to get Dayton back in and, you know, have him tell us about Kronos again and how many regions there are.
Okay.
And for those listeners that don't understand what I'm talking about, Dayton Ward is the gentleman who wrote the travel guide for Kronos that we discussed many months ago.
Ah, yes. We went down that road.
Couldn't find our way back for months, but we did go down the road.
Yeah. Okay, so, well, we've got Kotmag, region, and what are some of the idiosyncrasies of that particular region?
See, now there's a thing, is you looked at it and you said, quote, Mog, but the way Mark wrote it up was quote Mog.
Yeah, that's right. QO comes out with an Q, with a, like a KR.
Yeah. It's weird with the Klingon language. It's why it's so great to have Klingon speakers when you can get them.
Yes.
To correct you and get you on the right track.
Absolutely.
Track.
Absolutely. Because, yeah, now that I think of it, Kronosh is Q-U-O, which it confused me for a very long time. How they say, for instance, on the TV series Kronos, and it's not, there's no R in it.
So true.
That always kind of messed me up until of course, I looked it up at the KLI. So.
Mm-hmm. And for those people who aren't familiar with it, KLI is the Klingon Language Institute that has a website out there, KLI.org, that is a great reference material, a great reference site for all things in the Klingon language. And as Mark comes up with new words, mainly because the Klingon Language Institute demands that he come up with new words, they add them to their database.
Right. So, well, we got different, let's just say we've got different dialects. Now, what about grammar? What do we know about grammar from this book?
She usually makes the pies and the, fixes the meals.
Ouch.
There's different ways of saying different things. He talks about in the book. In standard Klingon, Terran, ga, kama eh, prisoner is a Terran. But in the Morscan dialect, you get Terragon, ga, kama, or the prisoner is a Terran. It's you can hear the same speech pattern going through both of them, but there's slight differences in how it's said.
So, yeah. So, in other words, a prisoner is a Terran is a single one, but you have different language or different idiosyncrasies in each region. So,
Jalja, Tadij, may your knife be sharp.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're doing that as a toast, okay, the first statement was basically a statement, but if you're doing it as a toast, it's Tadjil, Jaja.
Yeah.
How do you know a toast? Well, toasts tend to end up with J-A-J at the end of them.
Ah.
Ja.
Okay.
If you look at most toasts, they're going to end in J-A-J.
Yeah. So now this
so that everybody knows it is.
Yeah. So this, and it looks to me like those two, you just basically reverse them. So one would be apparently more formal than the other.
Could be.
Yeah.
Now, it's hard to say which one's formal. they're both probably fairly formal. It's just that one is more celebratory than the other one.
Right, which is kind of what I meant by more formal. If you stand up at a banquet, for instance, and say these, you know, I'm going to throw out a disclaimer right here and now. Neither John nor I are experts in the Klingon language.
Nope.
No. We know a few words, but as far as vocabulary, syntax, all those things, we're kind of limited. So if things are mispronounced, please don't go crazy on us.
But I think you're going to find that if you get Klingon for the Galactic Traveler and go through it, probably more than once, Mark does a very good job of taking the phrases that he's talking about, breaking them down so you can see what the meanings of them are, meaning of the words are, and showing you how to pronounce them in each case.
Mm-hmm.
So just reading the book is going to make you a better Klingon speaker than you were before you started.
Yeah, and then enhance that with the recordings of pronunciations on the KLI. Which John Shi has done many of.
Or, better yet, go out to Duolingo. There is a Klingon language site at Duolingual Language Learning Software for Klingon that not only lets you read the Klingon and answer questions, but listen to the Klingon now and answer questions.
Yeah. Is that not a course?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And there are various levels to it. So as you go through the material, it will keep moving you up to a higher and higher difficulty level.
Okay. Well, good. All right, vocabulary. And we start out with food items.
Yeah, I just threw a few out there to give you a handle on what's going on. Gob, I guess that's how it's pronounced.
Gob,
is
yeah.
Chunk of meat, but it can also be called gabtun, which is a fillet of soft meat without a bone.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a mevbarg, which is a pot helmet, versus a chor, or chorbarg, which is also another type of cooking pot.
Yeah.
Belly pot or belly. So, you know.
Yeah.
What can you say about vocabulary? Go out, learn it, study it, read your dictionary, memorize it. I can't, but you can. So.
So we have some generational variations on things. So as time...
Those darn kids, they keep messing up how you pronounce the language.
Well,
get off my lawn.
Well, you know, you just go with the same thing we have going on today.
I still won't stay off my lawn today.
Yeah, get off my lawn. The, for instance... text messaging. I get...
I don't speak IOG to you.
No.
Emoji. I don't speak emoji to you.
No, not even... Well, not that. Not only that, but not spelling out words.
Well, fortunately, with the internet, and if you're near it, you can look up what they've not included.
Yes. But I mean, you know, instead of when they say in a text message, for you, you get a... the numeral 4 followed by the letter U. And
oh, that's not that hard. It's when they started using LOL.
Yeah. Well, even then, write all the words. If a student sends me a text message that is and it's cryptic like that, I don't have time to try to decipher what they're talking about. Okay.
Or what if they send you a smiley picture, a winking picture, a upside down frowny picture, a all emoji message? Apparently that makes sense to them.
Yeah, it does not to me. And I don't
even
respond.
Here we are, two old fogies complaining about what kids are doing today. I suppose that's trying to talk about what Mark is talking about. About by his generational variations.
Yes.
J is pronounced more like S in Federation Standard, translated as ZH. So you've got Nash becomes Naj.
Naj, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Naj,
job. I mean, neither one of us can really pronounce these.
Job, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And the big one. To me, this is the big one. The T, is it T-I-H or T-L-H?
I believe it is T-L-H. And okay, for those of you who are not aware of it, T-L-H in Klingon is considered a single letter.
Mm-hmm.
That's not three letters. That's not a combination of two like you see a lot in other places in Klingon. T-L-H is considered a single letter.
Yes.
And if you talk to Klingon speakers, they try to teach you to pronounce TLH by putting your tongue halfway back in your mouth and letting air hiss around it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy.
No, it isn't. As a matter of fact, I looked that up once on YouTube, and there is a Klingon language speaker in Germany.
Leon Lietor, I believe is his name, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, he has a lot of videos, and he's standing in front of the camera in full costume, and he pronounces
this. Not most of the time.
And it sounds almost like he's kind of gagging when he says this.
So. Well, if you think about it, you're putting your tongue halfway back in your mouth, on the roof of your mouth. So, yeah, you know, you're trying to choke off sound.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, I have a lot of trouble getting my tongue around this one. But for instance, my ship.
Pun intended.
Yeah, for real. My ship is called the Heart of Honor, which in Klingon is spelled BATLH and then TIQ. So that comes out sounding like Bachtik, I think. Bachtik. So that's about the closest I can get. So I just stick with English and call it the Heart of Honor and leave it at that.
And for a quick translation for those people who are really unfamiliar with Klingon language, the Bach that he's talking about is the first word of his ship is the word for honor.
Mm-hmm.
So his actual translation would be honor ship.
Or honor heart, yes.
So,
yep.
Honor heart, yeah.
Yeah.
So
young people, as they are, as humans are lazy, and they pronounce things funny, and it becomes part of the vernacular as it gets picked up, and as those children grow, they retain those patterns and teach it to their children, and I'm sure this would happen the same in Klingon.
Yeah. I think you're seeing more, though, of as the children, Klingon children, grow, they've got more of an enforcement of getting rid of their childish idiosyncrasies than we do in English, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you see a lot more speech patterns today that are considered norm, that are actually in the Oxford English Dictionary that were considered slang back when we were kids.
Yeah. Well, I remember a teacher pointing this out to us one time. I was in class and it was using two words, babies suck, right? Where some of our words...
You see that in school?
We'll see. But the thing of it is they do. That's how they feed themselves. All right. So
yeah, I know we've got different meanings for those words today.
Right. I mean, is it a verb? Is it a noun? Is it an adjective? You know, it depends on what part of speech you're using it as. And you know, because right away, as soon as she said babies suck, everybody just cracked up.
Yeah.
But that's not what she was talking about. You know, I'll tell you what, it's a very, very fragile thing language can be.
Well, especially in Klingon, and there are so many words that are pronounced the same that you need to know, is it being used as a verb or is it being used as a noun?
Mm-hmm.
As to what it actually means.
Right. What part of speech is it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. And you have here a section called Specialized Vocabulary. And this promises to be perhaps quite helpful in the real world.
If you're trying to put together a display for a convention and you're trying to name all the different Klingon weapons, Mark has gone through and named and explained why they are called what they're called. We start out this specialized vocabulary section with wars, battles, and warriors. And there's a specific term for war in general, besh, and a specific term for war when it's a battle, nah, no, something like that. And then you've got, again, for battle, you got a general, bic, or specific, may. One is for the whole campaign, one is for a specific thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful what you're talking about when you're trying to explain something.
Yes. Yeah, for instance, the Battle of the Bulge is an event that took place during World War II. And it was not a war in itself. It was part of a war.
Right.
So
we got smaller. And then we've got, as far as weaponry is concerned, we've got traditional weaponry and modern weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
If we're looking at modern weaponry, one of the tools available to Klingons uniquely is the mind sifter, the Tok'dog. You hear it referred to in Erin of Mercy, and that they're going to put Spock under it, and it doesn't work on him.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't realize he's a Vulcan, so they just think he's telling the truth. But if you go to one of the fan films produced, there's an episode of Star Trek Phase 2 where they actually put Kirk under the mind sifter.
Ah.
And oddly enough, I believe that episode is named Mind Sifter.
Mm-hmm.
So, now here's an interesting thing. There is a Klingon agonizer, a Quig Peg or something along that lines.
Keej Peg.
But I only remember seeing it in Mirror Mirror. I only remember seeing agonizer technology being used in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, so that's it. I remember Spock asking for your agonizer, please. And he didn't he apply that to Chekhov?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I
he
thought
did.
So.
But it's here it is. Mark's got it part of the Klingon Empire now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a Nishwi Hig, which is a handheld disruptor.
Mm-hmm.
You got a Nishwi Bej, which is the disruptor rifle.
Uh-huh.
And a Nishwi Da, which are disruptor banks. But if you can handle, if you can carry a disruptor bank, you're doing real good. It's usually just on ships.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you've got the Peg, which is Peng, which is the torpedo.
Right. So these are all.
Oddly enough, the plural for Peng mm-hmm. is Cha.
Ah, so.
You were saying, Jim?
I was going to say, now these are all examples of modern weapons, columnated energy weapons, disruptors, weapons that you use at a distance. And many of them are specifically for battle in space, because obviously you're not going to jump off your ship and go after somebody else with a batleth. So then,
unless of course your name is Worf and you're going after the Borg.
Well, yeah, and they happen to be standing on your ship. So now we have the more traditional weaponry, which consists of bladed weapons mostly.
You got your Betleth and your Mekleth, which you all heard of.
Mm-hmm.
The Yang sword, the Yang Wei, which is the person using a sword or sword wielder.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Batleth, which is also a name for the Batleth wielder.
Mm-hmm.
The Ha Kui Ki, something along those lines.
Ha Kuj.
Okay, go with that. Is the baldric or belt that you wear across your chest to support the Yang. Won't do much good for a Batleth. You see those being hung over the back, mm-hmm. especially in the Star Trek series Enterprise. But the Yang can be dangled from a baldric, mainly because we've seen it done in the Middle Ages or on some really prestigious military parades. A Taj is a knife.
Mm-hmm.
And there are dozens of variations of the Taj. And this is where if you're building a display to show them off, here you've got their names. Tatang, Kutloth, Kis, Kwandok, Tajdeh, Not Taj, Pemet Taj.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is interesting because if you're not aware of it, the knife that is used in the Klingon restaurant on DS9 is actually a Nataj, or vegetable or fruit knife.
Ah.
The Pemet Taj is a tool knife.
Mm-hmm.
The others are knives for carving up people.
Yes.
Now, this is the, I don't know if we can call Klingon for the Galactic Traveler canon or not, but this is the only reference that I found kind of canon for the Akleth, which is been described by a lot of people as the clerical polearm. It's basically a half batleth mounted on the end of a pole. They call it a half batleth, half axe.
Mm.
But I've been looking for it within Star Trek. I've never seen it referenced on any of the series, but you see it a lot being built.
Mm-hmm. That's just because it looks so cool.
Yeah. A Gin Ta is a battle spear. We have a Kin spearhead, a Kin Pup, perfect spear. Okay, I'll just throw this out. What is a perfect spear? Well, it's just a spear with a point and nothing else. A Kin Vaj, okay, it's more like a trident. It's a multi-headed spear.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a Setvej, or a barb-headed spear. So even amongst the spears, there are a whole bunch of different categories you can use.
Yeah.
And then here we go with stuff I didn't know about. I haven't seen on Trek. A Jep Quig is a club or a bludgeon.
Yeah, Keech, I think.
And okay. And they show an example of it in the book as the cane that the Chancellor in Star Trek VI carries around.
Yes.
You know, a can jag is a club with a metal head, a.k.a. a mace.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never seen this in Trek, but based on how the Agleth is set up, I had to speculate on my own personal recognizance, and here Mark goes ahead and confirms it. They did have a yod, or shield.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually carrying around a shield.
Would that also translate to shields on a ship?
I don't know.
I wonder.
Mark didn't talk about it because he had them listed under the traditional weaponry section of the book.
Yeah. Now, Jeg Keech, a club or a bludgeon, you know, we may have seen that also in an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine called You Are Cordially Invited.
Oh, that spongy thing on a stick that
yeah.
They're going to go after Worf with?
Worf and Jadzia.
Go through the bachelor ceremonies?
Yes.
Oh, no. They're going after Worf. He made him go through the bachelor party. They're going after him.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that wouldn't just be considered a ceremonial thing, but it would also be considered a club or bludgeon.
Nothing else. When you've got two people like Bashir and O'Brien participating in it, well, there's a club.
I like this next section. You got duels and challenges. Don't sneeze, as hi-choo means duel perfectly to the death.
Okay. If you see anything referred to as fighting perfectly, it means to the death. That's what it means in the Klingon language. Perfectly means. But yeah, you're right. It's just hachoo.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me a second to get my bat lift.
Yep, I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
There's no peekaboo either, as Cab Deng Chang means he, she shows his, her face, which is starting a duel.
Mm-hmm.
Haiyang is a short form, which basically means show me your face. But, you know, facing your enemy is their way of initiating duels or challenges in that society.
Yes. So there are also sections in the book that concern music, very short section, the visual arts, and food, which we're not going to go very deeply into, but we do have some idioms we need to look at.
Yeah, we got to make sure that, you know, there's still material in the book you need to go read.
Yeah. There is a ton of stuff to remember in this book. I don't remember how many pages it is, but
it's only about 210 pages, but it's packed.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I say if it was a novel, it would be an easier read, but it is not. It is a textbook.
Yeah.
And you need to go into it treating it as one.
You would go into a situation and you would want to look up whatever the situation happens to be. Say you're going to the opera and you're going to buy tickets for the opera. Well, there's a correct way to order tickets. For instance, I always like the example of going into a Klingon shop and walking in, and you say, you look at the person who owns the shop and you say, Nukne. And it's like, what you're doing is you're asking the shop owner, what do you want? Well, the shop owner doesn't care. You know, he doesn't want anything. He wants you to buy something and get out. You know,
pretty much. So he's the one that should be saying nuke knock, and we'll probably be saying it if you've been looking around a bit too long.
Yeah. So another form of a greeting would be, for instance, Kavan, which basically translates to you honor me. So,
but make sure you get it right, because if you say Kavin, you want a cup of coffee.
Yes. I remember.
Which is, and the easiest way to remember that is that that's another one of Mark's puns.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because Kavin is his play on the word caffeine,
mm-hmm,
for coffee.
Yep. So the idioms don't directly translate between languages necessarily.
No, they usually don't. We've got one that...
Dosh we keep.
We hit one target. Okay, this is not shooting something, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the next one. Cha, dosh me, dip pill.
Deep keep.
Okay, or whatever it is. Okay, that means we hit multiple targets, okay? But in both cases, that's not really what they mean. In the first case, it means when we say we hit one target, we're thinking on the same terms.
Yeah.
Okay, in the second statement, we hit multiple targets means we're disagreeing. We're not coming to the same conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we're talking about with idioms. You're saying something, but your meaning is slightly different than what the actual verbiage is saying.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to watch out what you're hearing from people.
Yeah. Let me try this next one. Hoch yag pu daj ho pu.
Okay. And it translates to Ishi has killed all his her enemies. Now, that could be, hey, what a great victory. He's done it.
Mm-hmm.
Except that it really means he's leading a meaningless life.
Right.
He's got nothing else to do. He's finished all his challenges.
Mm-hmm. So
that's what we're talking about with idioms. They mean slightly different than what we're actually saying.
Mm-hmm. And then there's other common idioms. Nag lojmit.
The door is locked, which can mean the situation has an unavoidable outcome, or that plan or commitment is firm and cannot be changed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that, you know, the door is locked and really all you got to do is put a plastic explosive on it and now you can get through it.
Yeah. And then there's hoch nu kel.
Consider every weapon, all right, which means, you know, which gets broken down into consider every possibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just, hey, okay, there's a disruptor here and there's a mechla here. Which one do I want to use to open that door?
So, in other words, you've got situations where the literal translation of something, you can't take it at face value. Like, for instance, consider every weapon. If a Klingon were to say that to a person and they're looking around and I don't see any weapons here.
So the Klingon would probably slap his palm to his head and said, you idiot, I'm just trying to get you to think about possibilities.
It's an idiom, you idiot.
Yeah.
All right. Smiles. Now, we learned...
No. Jim.
What?
Similes.
Oh, similes. Okay. Well, and I'll tell you what, though. I want to throw in about smiles. Don't smile at a Klingon.
No.
Remember, Kor did not like it when the Organians smiled too much. All right, similes.
No, it's pretty bad. Damn.
Yep. All right, similes.
Ram. I can't even begin to pronounce that one.
Galab.
Can you go, Jim?
He lob you roar.
He, she, it is trivial. He, she, it resembles a gobfly.
A globfly, yeah. And we talked about globfly on one of our sessions with Cartan. And basically a globfly is a symbol for something that is absolutely useless and maybe a little aggravating.
Actually, it's not so much a symbol as it's an actual fly that actually is irritating and doesn't really make a whole lot of difference because it's like the fruit fly is to people, to earthlings.
Mm-hmm. So you want to watch out for doch, which is also tigla rur.
Foolish as a tigla.
Yeah, you sure wouldn't.
Which is another Klingon animal.
Yeah. See, if you have somebody with you you don't like, you can teach them that phrase and say, go tell that guy with the batleth this.
Now, which one are you trying to get rid of, though?
Well, exactly.
The person you're sending or the person with the batleth?
That would be the person you're sending.
Then, if he goes, you know he is as foolish as a tigla.
Right. All right, generational differences. I think we kind of talked a little bit about
this. Yeah, we did. Most of the rest of the outline that I've got here basically talks about other sections of the book. There are a lot more sections of this book. There's a lot more information about Klingon language and what can be done with it, what has been done with it, and what you got to watch out for when you're talking to somebody who is a Klingon. Because, well, number one, they're going to judge you right off the bat by how you speak and how you use the language.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to treat you as, you know, either somebody who's competent and taking the time to learn Klingon whole or an off-worlder.
Mm-hmm.
Not really worth my effort.
No. I do know from my experiences teaching foreign exchange students, the ones from Germany, and I do speak a little German. When I talk to them in their language, they love it and they appreciate it.
So you're saying you know a little German?
Yeah, he lives right down the street.
I was just gonna jump on that one. You've seen the airplane too many times, Jim.
Yes, I've seen it a few.
Excuse me, not airplane. Top Secret.
That was it. Yep. But no, people that speak other languages appreciate the attempt, even the attempt at speaking their language. Even if you do it badly, they really appreciate the effort.
I was working as an orderly in a hospital back in Omaha to get through college, and there was a patient in the ward that nobody could get through to, and I spoke a couple of words of Spanish to him because it sounded like that's what he went ballistic.
Oh yeah.
Somebody was finally speaking his language. Ah. I had to back him down and say, No. Muy poco. Fortunately, the nurse I was working with did speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So I could get her to come in and explain the situation from my perspective to it. And we finally got through to the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, we were the night staff. So this guy had gone through the day and evening staff without being able to communicate.
Right. Oh, yeah. And I've run into that a couple of times myself. I remember a young woman who was only a Spanish speaker. I don't think she spoke any English at all, or very, very little at any rate, wanted to check her oil. And I looked in the engine compartment and I couldn't find anything in there to tell me how to check the oil. But I did know the word book. I do know the word book, libros. And I asked her, I pointed to the car and I said, libros. And she right away understood I was talking about the owner's manual.
That's good, because my response would have been, no. This is the car.
Yeah.
That is a book. They're not the same.
Yeah. But she.
And besides, I'm worried about the oil.
Yeah. She understood anyway, John, you turkey. She understood right away that I was asking for the owner's manual in order to find out how to check the oil and where to fill it if it needed to be. And she went right into the glove box and pulled out the book, which was in English, Spanish, French, and whatever else. Yeah. So,
and the first sentence was, "This is an electric car. There is no oil."
Well, no, not when this was happening in the 80s, early 80s. So.
Oh, it could. We had electric cars at the turn of the last century.
Yeah. So we have also in the book included are changing rules, common errors, clipped Klingon, unintentional ungrammaticality, and ritualized speech. And then my favorite section in this was avoiding gaffes, which was next.
Which could kill you.
Yeah, with a single letter getting it wrong. For instance, if you're supposed to use an E or E instead of an I, which would be E, pronounced E, messing up those two letters completely changes the word, and it would take a very innocent sentence and turn it into a huge insult that will get you killed.
So, yeah, know the language, guys.
Yeah, and there's a few others, though, and then the glottal stop. I call it a guttural stop, but a glottal stop.
It's sometimes pronounced guttural.
Yeah.
But it's a glottal stop.
Right. And it's...
Which is interesting because you should know that because it's a German term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I didn't say I was fluent in German. I always joke. I always tell my students I took 4 years of German 1 in high school.
Yeah.
But, the glottal stop is indicated in a text as an apostrophe before or after a word.
Sometimes in the middle of a word, depending on whether or not you've got a vowel sound that needs to be broken off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, for instance, I've heard kapla pronounced as a kapla with that soft, but more often I hear it as kapla, where you stop that sound abruptly. Or I've even heard kapla.
Depending on whether or not they put the guttural stop after the QA.
Right.
Before the PLA.
So, and there's lots of differences there, which, of course, are accounted for by dialect, apparently.
As you can see from the amount of stammering and stuttering and trying to get our thoughts together on this subject, Klingon whole is quite complicated to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And we are thankful that Mark keeps putting these books out on the subject and keeps his hand in the KLI, Klingon Language Institute, to keep us on our toes, to keep us focused and pointed in the right direction towards learning this language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can get in some trouble. And, you know, we also have another section on direct address, and that's how you would talk to another person. I don't remember exactly what the book said about directing another person or talking to another person directly. The only example I can come up with is for instance, in German, you have to be invited to address somebody in certain ways. For instance, if I were looking for someone, I might say, "Wo bist du?" All right. Now, if it's someone familiar to me and they have told me that I can address them as "du," then that's fine. Otherwise, if I haven't been...
So if you get the right permission, then you can do the "du."
Correct. You can do the "du." If you don't have the permission, it is "Wo sind Sie?" Okay. So you want to be careful of that, because you can insult somebody. And then we have mismatched concepts as the last section of the book. So
I was going back and looking at some of the direct address thingies.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things they talk about is as you get older, you start dropping the "oi" at the end of certain words.
Ah.
Sas oi is mummy. Sas is mother.
Ah.
Sas oi is mummy. Va is father. Well, Oi is daddy.
Ah, well, of course, yeah.
You know, and things along those lines.
And humans tend to do the same, so.
So, I'm just trying to throw some Klingon examples out to go along with your German examples.
Yep.
There is so much to this book, and the last, 60 pages are yet more dictionary terms.
Yes.
New words that Mark has added to the Klingon language that he incorporated in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I say, he's still doing it.
Yeah.
Every year, they have a meeting of the Klingon Language Institute. Anymore, I think it's pretty much in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And they're expecting him to come with a dozen new words to add to the lexicon.
And he enjoys doing it, so.
Well, yeah, I have to say, he probably enjoys doing it, but getting him to admit that is not easy.
Yeah. No, a few shows back, we talked to Dr. Okrand about his experience creating the language and how he never envisioned it going as far as it has. So
he didn't envision it going past Star Trek III.
No, it was just supposed to be something that you use in the film and you're done with it.
Yeah.
But it's actually a legitimate language.
I think there's at least two legitimate made-up languages. Klingon is actually the second. The first is Elvish.
Elvish. Okay, I'm not familiar with Elvish at all.
Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I thought you were going to start singing one for the money, two for the show.
No, not Elvis.
Oh.
Elvish.
Oh. Well, see, that's what happens when you get old, the hearing goes. And it's
yeah.
See, I can pun too, all right?
Yeah. We got to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, my idea with this is it's really a good book. It is hard to read. It is a slow read, especially if you did what I did and stopped all along the way trying to pronounce everything out loud.
Oh, God, that was tough.
Yeah, you know, I have an interest in learning the language. I don't know if I'm actually going to follow through and learn all of it, but I would like to learn more so that when I am at a convention, I can at least
ask where the bathroom is.
Oh yeah, or at least appear more authentic than I do. I think it would really add. Knowing the language adds a lot to your persona as a Klingon.
And even if you don't learn the language. Learn enough of it so that you can read the language. Imagine going into a library because you volunteered to do a reading and you've got a couple of other Klingons with you. You sit down, you pick up the book, and you start reading it in Klingon.
Yeah.
And somebody has to slap you upside the head and say, No, these people don't understand Klingon. Read it in their language.
Yeah. At that point, you got to kind of fake it, though. Yeah, punt.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what, if you literally try to read Klingon from English, you're going
No.
You're going to have a mess.
Grab yourself a copy of Much Ado About Nothing or Hamlet or Gilgamesh so that you've got the Klingon on one side of the page and English on the other.
Ah, yep.
Cheat.
I'm looking.
Cheat.
Yes, I'm looking at a copy of Hamlet as we speak in the original Klingon and English.
So, you know what I mean?
Yes. So, who would you envision finding this book being useful for?
Anybody who wants to learn Klingon. Anybody who's already started taking the Duolingo course, been to the KLI website and putzed around with it a bit, even really good speakers of the language who are looking to augment what they've learned.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, most importantly, anybody who's looking to go to Kronos for a vacation.
Yes, as opposed to Ryza.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm doing too many cruises to think about going anywhere but Risa.
Yeah, there you go. So, I guess that's where we're going to leave this for today.
For you guys to pick up the book and start your own journey.
Yes, because I'll tell you what, this one is available in electronic format for the Kindle. That's how I've gotten mine. It is available, unlike the Klingon Way, which I got is not available electronically, and I had to get a print copy of that. Fortunately, I got a decent looking copy for not a lot of dollars.
And to make matters worse, you got to learn a bit of the language if you're going to get the book signed, because Mark signs it in Klingon.
Yep.
In my book, he's got two John, Klingon Wo, Jupra, Kapla, Mark Okrand.
Nice.
So, yeah, he's signed each one of my books differently. So if you're going to go to Mark and get him signed, expect to have to pull out the dictionary, unless you're already a Klingon speaker.
Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, I think we're going to start wrapping this one up, unless you had anything else to say, John.
No, I think we're close enough to Christmas that we can just go ahead and wrap her up.
All right. So our next book that we're going to read is called Faces of Fire by Michael Jan Friedman. Well, next time on Bound by Honor, that is what we're going to be talking about.
Or, you know, just farbling around because we don't have anything else to do. And no, we'll talk about the book. We'll talk about the book.
Okay, sounds good. So, for Bound by Honor, I am Jajim.
And I am Jorn.
Kaplah. You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group book review podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kirk Zantai Loon Keech. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplah!